Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Welcome, everyone, to a very special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. Why is this a very special episode? Because I'm in Portland right now, along with Corbin. We're doing it big. We're at the SVU house, SVU headquarters, hashtag SVU HQ. Check it out. We'll have a stream, Brainstorm Brewery, on the Brewski Bistro stream right there. And you can see all the madness that's going on. Yeah, it's going to be crazy. Brewski Championship. It's team sealed tomorrow morning, Saturday. So when you guys hear this, so I'll be in a team with Maddie Studios and my brother. Corbin's going to be doing text coverage, so he's going to be working the whole time that we're having fun. So you can make as much fun of him as you want to. And then we got Jason and Ryan here, and they're just going to be sucking their thumbs at home. Sorry about that, guys.
I'm sorry I can't go to every GP.
Me too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have another family weekend. Both my sisters are going off to college next week, so. That happens.
Family stuff.
Boring. Sorry.
Right, yeah.
But then Gen Con is like that, so suck it, nerds.
Yeah, I won't be there. You're right.
I have no idea if I'm going to Gen Con yet. Like, the deadline to buy tickets for the Star Realms tournament is looming, and I'm still dragging my feet. It's because I don't have a place to stay yet.
You're all like, about the Star Realms that I still know nothing about.
I should definitely go and play this tournament. Like, there's no
reason. You should go to Gen Con because it's Gen Con.
I mean, Gen Con is the absolute tits, but I took my wife last year and she can't go this year, so I don't know how much fun I'll have with her at home. Oh, wait, all of it.
Oh, good. I didn't catch the sarcasm. That was a good shoe to drop. I love it. So are you going to make it there to Gen Con, Corbin, after Portland?
No, because that would be what we call football season.
Ah.
So this Portland trip, which is like work since I'm actually working there, but it's still going to be a fun trip, is kind of like my last hurrah before I hit football season and get very busy.
Here's what I'm going to do you a favor, Corbin. I'm going to let everybody know that you're in Portland for Magic cards, and then you'll just get fired as a sports writer because no one will take you seriously in the world of high school sports.
Funny story.
Out you're a nerd, so like
funny story. We have a new publisher who's like, you know, the head in charge of all the newspaper, all the departments. He looked for me on Twitter, found my, you know, my Seahawks88 Twitter handle, which is my Magic one, got very confused for a day, and then came in asking me how the Magic was going. And now every time I see him, that's all he asks me about. So it's no longer a secret. I have been outed at work.
This is perfect. It's all part of our plan to unravel you slowly one by one.
Okay, preps, guys. That's all I'm saying. If you get bored in the next couple weeks, just check out the hashtag Okay Preps, and I will have plenty of high school football stories to fill your day.
I haven't trolled that hashtag in a while.
Wait for football season to start. That's when you can get people.
Like I was preparing some burgers to go on the grill, and they just turned out okay. Okay, preps.
So what happened? If people don't know about this, this is a meme from a long time ago. So early listeners, people that really understand, shout out to you guys. But everyone else, don't feel bad about it. But okay, preps. What is the okay preps?
It's not a meme. It's literally the Twitter hashtag that everyone in Oklahoma uses for Oklahoma prep sports. So like on a Friday night, there's dozens and dozens or hundreds of tweets going out about okay preps with all the high school football scores. And I do, my life is during football season, so follow high school football. So I do follow the hashtag and eagerly track a lot of scores from around the state.
And then we happen to notice this hashtag being used by Corbin all the time. And then we happen to hijack it to the point. I think Corbin no longer uses the hashtag.
Well, I created a separate account for Magic and work. No, the best though was Sam Davis Boy Hero on Twitter live tweeted my wedding using the hashtag Okay Preps. That was pretty funny.
There you go. Some history to the cast. Now we're going to jump into this good old Finance 101. Got a good topic for people. We're going to talk about card grading. Now, this is can almost be considered an advanced topic, but, you know, we're going to deal with the nuts and bolts. I mean, car grading is a lot of people don't realize early on that it affects the values a lot. And when they do buy lists, they're often surprised when their cars get downgraded and they don't get the prices that they thought they were going to get. So let's jump into this. Who wants to start this off?
Ryan, why don't you go?
I'll start it.
Please don't cut that awkward silence. Please insert crickets chirping.
I was ready for Ryan to take it away. I was waiting on it.
We get the cricket in effect here. All right, so I guess I just didn't really know where to start, so we talked a lot about this about previously in the cast, and my opinion differs a little bit. But I think really a problem I see a lot of people when they're first starting out is they don't really understand that just because the card's got a couple of dings in it doesn't seem like a big deal to them. When you go to get rid of that card down the road, that can make a huge impact on the price, cutting what you can get out of the value by 50% at times off of whether it be a buy list or selling it on eBay or however you're going to decide to out it. So you just have to be very careful overall when you're picking up cards. It's okay to pick up cards that are beat up, but just make sure that if it's something you think you're going to be selling, that you need to, you know, take precautions to not lose a ton of value out of it.
Well, and one of the things is that, you know, if you're looking for a card to play with, you know, I understand that if you want to save money by getting a moderately played copy instead of a near mint copy, that's totally fine. You just have to be aware going in that, like Ryan said, you know, the difference of buying, let's say Misty Rainforest. Okay. Let's look it up. $80 retail, $75 retail for slightly played, $70 retail for moderately played. Yeah. You save $10. By getting that moderately played, but like what Ryan's saying is if you go to a dealer later to try to sell it, they're going to knock off more than that percentage just because like moderately played cards don't always move as well. Now what you can do if you do have moderately played cards is trade them because like you said, and you may be in this position, a lot of people don't care if the card is nicked up if they're in it to play. Like if you're trying to play F&M with standard cards and not sell your cards later or, you know, trying to build a modern deck and you don't plan on selling it, you know what? It's worth it. It's easier for you to get the cards at a cheaper price because they still play the same. You know, that Misty Rainforest will still fetch out the lands for you. So that's just a decision you have to make going in is that are you trying to value that long-term price of it or are you just trying to make it as cheap as possible for yourself to build a deck? And both of those approaches are okay. You just have to know what is right for you.
Absolutely. I agree.
Well, how do you, Ryan, how do you go about, you know, in a nutshell, I guess the Cliff Notes version, what kind of makes a card near mint is it, or slightly played or heavily played or damaged? Like does one nick on a card make it suddenly not near mint or what, how do you suggest people go about it?
The real difference for me, and I guess this being kind of as a vendor, someone who's sat behind the booth and bought cards before, there's really a line. Most of the time, if you bring me a card that's going to have a few dings on it, that's okay. Most people are going to buy that at near mint price. It may be a little bit lower if it's showing too much wear. But what you really have an issue with is when you start seeing whitening around the edges, any sort of shuffle crease, those kind of wear effects are when you're really talking about them taking, you know, 30, 40, 50% of the value away because it's really hard to move those cards. So as long as the big thing is the structure of the card. If the card is still a Magic card that goes in a sleeve and is playable, it is still going to have quite a bit of value. If you get below that, I usually just try and stay away from those cards overall. That's your damage, maybe borderline heavily played. Then you have your cards that if you're just looking to play them, it's okay for to have the shuffle creases, stuff like that. That's your moderately played. That's, you know, somewhere in that middle ground. And then your near mint and slightly played can kind of be lumped together because most people are going to treat them very similar. Like I said, you really have to just kind of learn that line over time and looking at enough cards. But if there's a couple of little dings on it, I don't think you have to concern yourself with not having, you know, necessarily a near mint card. At the very least, your value should be very close.
Okay, so the takeaways for this is, you know, like Ryan said, know those grades, know how to try to determine it, you know, and at some point, it's just a line you learn, but at least being able to think about it when you're looking at a card and not just gloss over the condition of it. Know how it affects the price.
If, I was going to say, if you're looking for a further resource, one of the best grading guides I've found is right on TCG Player. If you go onto any other items and you click the actual grade, it'll bring up their grading guide. And that one's very comprehensive, has multiple pictures of every different kind of thing that would fit into a grade. And that's fairly industry standard. Most people are very along those lines. They're a little bit looser when it comes to the bottom end stuff. But if you want an idea of like what a retailer would grade your card at, that's a good resource to use.
Yeah, the next takeaway would be knowing how it affects the price. Like you said, the moderately played dealers will pay significantly less on them because they just don't want them. People don't necessarily want to buy them. But it doesn't mean that, say, a $10 card, like I'm looking at Birthing Pod right now, the near price is $10. The moderately played price is $8. You know, if somebody comes up to you and says, hey, this card's played, it's $10 retail, you know, I only want to give you $4 and trade for it because it's beat up. Like, you know, that card is not – you just have to know how it affects it there. And it's not 50% less, for instance. You're looking more at like 20 to 30% less. And just kind of knowing that when you're trading can really help you from both ends.
And so, you know, you got all these nice minty cards and you did, you know, very well doing your trading. You picked up the right cards. How do you keep these cards in this excellent condition? It's like, what are the ways? Because me, I got a Moto collection. All I got to do is make sure I change my passwords every few months and my collection stays nice.
Fair. I think the biggest thing is, obviously, you know, this is going to sound extremely basic, but sleeve your cards. If you're going to play, sleeve your cards. If you're going to put them in binders, sleeve your cards. Just leave your cards in protective sleeves. That way, no matter what, if it gets this corner knocked against something else, you're not going to put a gouge in it, anything like that. That is absolutely just like the most basic rule. Anything that's expensive that you don't want damaged, just leave it in sleeves. It's not going to get any more damaged. It's not that big of a deal to take it out of that sleeve and have to put it into a sleeve for a deck.
And building on that, keep a binder. I mean, just it seems so simple, but I see so many people come in and they just have a box full of cards. Well, every time somebody takes those cards out and drops them back in and they clunk down on the bottom of the box, they rub into each other. That stuff's all just getting, you know, kind of chipped up and dinged up. Keep it in a binder. Make sure on those binders that you have that you don't have, you know, just a huge binder where the rings on the binder dig into the card. Because that's a problem some people have is you get their cards and there's a crease, maybe not a crease, but like a dent, a bend in the middle of the card where the binder ring is just dug into it. So, I mean, it's just very simple. You get a nice binder where the rings are small enough that they don't damage the cards or, you know, they maybe lay differently. That sort of stuff goes a very long way over the course of 2 or 3 years of your collection to keeping your stuff safe and able to maximize that value on the back end of it.
What about foils? What are things that you do to make sure the foils don't warp?
Keep them dry. Moisture will warp a foil like nothing else. I had to buy a dehumidifier for my basement because I had a problem with my foils curling up. You need to get the situation nice and dry. For them not to curl up like that. It's mostly moisture that does that because, you know, it's just like the same principle actually that works on your thermostat. You have a coil of metal and it's two different kind of metal on one side. So when, you know, when it heats up more, one of the metals changes their density faster and it curls over. So with the, you know, the different composition of the foil, the moisture is going to make that curl up because it's, you know, temperature gradients and all that kind of crap. Look, it's all a bit technical.
Oh, whoa.
That was a science bomb dropped on us there.
Sorry. Someone's going to write in and tell me that I'm wrong because they're a thermodynamicist, but as I understand it, moisture will affect the temperature differential and that'll make the cards curl up like that. So keep them dry and don't let them get too cold, definitely. So that's because it's hard to get them to go back. What I've had to do was actually just kind of tessellate them so they're like the curled sides are facing each other and then just jam so many in a 5-row box that like you can't fit any more and then eventually they'll go back. But the best way to handle it is just not let them get like that. So like I said, I bought a dehumidifier from my basement and that's been a good way to store them. But, you know, I definitely live in Michigan where it gets very cold. And it's been raining a lot this spring and summer. So it's definitely very moist. Moist? I don't like that word. It's damp in my basement. So the dehumidifier is the way to go. Just keep your cards dry, bottom line. Don't leave them in a freezing cold car. If you live in a cold climate, just keep them warm and keep them dry.
Well, yeah, about that, a lot of people do keep cards in their car. You know, if a card is in a binder, does it matter if it's left in a hot car or, you know, during the winter in a cold car for a day or two at a time? I mean, does that affect it if it's sitting in a binder sleeve? You know, how do you guys handle that?
Sometimes it's unavoidable. Like, it's not ideal, though, to expose cards to the element. Foils more so than other types of cards. So if you can possibly avoid that sort of a situation, make sure you do. Because I've definitely had foils that did not benefit from being left in a cold car.
Right. And I think the important thing is that all the stuff we're saying about it, you know, to you as a player just trying to play a format, stuff that you don't even think about when you're trying to figure out what your 15 sideboard cards are. But it matters a lot. Like we said, like the value, the great thing about Magic cards is that even when you stop playing, that they have some value. And even if you plan to never stop playing, you know, you don't want to destroy the value of what you have. So it's easy stuff to do, really, you know, in terms of getting a binder and not leaving your stuff out in the car, all of that. But it makes a difference over time.
I do think we should talk about getting sleeves, especially if you happen to open up in like a rare mythic, foil mythic or something like that, and you decide, hey, I'm just going to raw dog it. It's better to strap up.
Even if it means, yeah, you're probably better off buying a, you know, those $4 sleeves for the draft than shuffling your foil Garrick in with the rest of your deck.
All right, so that's that. So let's jump into this email. We got an email for the week from Kelly Smith. He's out of the Bay Area. Shout out to Kelly. He says, what's up, Brew Crew? First off, let me extend a huge thank you to the group for some great podcasts. I'm relatively new to Magic. I found your podcast and listened to every episode over the past year. Always informative and always entertaining. Thank you very much. My question is this. What, where, when is there a worthwhile time to get a card graded? What cards are worth getting graded? I looked into the Comic-Con set and had a friend who collects baseball cards suggest that I go send them in for grading. Is grading brand new cards a worthwhile cost? If not, when would you send a card to get graded? What type of value increases could be expected? Thank you from Kelly.
So I guess the first thing is to talk about when he's talking about sending them in. It's sending them into a card company like PSA that will evaluate every inch of your card and send it back to you in a protected case. And it costs money to have it graded. The value of it on, you know, old baseball cards or old Magic cards, a lot of the times you'll see it on Power, is that it's a respected source telling you what grade it is. And that retains more value over something that, you know, you're just looking at a scan of it and anything could happen.
So how much does it cost to get a card graded on average?
Roughly $30 to $40 a card, in my experience.
Yeah. The more cards you send in, the better it is. That's usually what I suggest to people is if you think you're going to get something graded, don't just send in that one card. Set a number of cards aside over the course of even a year. The price isn't going to go up or anything like that, and it makes it much more cost efficient. As far as the actual question at hand, though, new cards, that's something really interesting because up until now, I would absolutely have said, no, you don't want to get any new cards graded because for the most part, it takes so long to recoup that $30 right off the bat that you're just not getting that much of a premium. And most people who want these newer cards want them to play with. There's not really the collectability to it. However, with these Comic-Con promos, I mean, we already see how much they went for last year. They sold out just as quickly again this year, and we're not sure if we're getting any more. It's unlikely. So we're probably going to have a similar issue, and I don't think they have a problem with that. This is supposed to be something very collectible, something very limited. Not everyone is supposed to have a set of these. And they didn't drop in price really over this past year from last year's, and even with the announcement of these new ones, they didn't really drop. So I think this is something where the people who want these – or there is enough people out there who want these where the demand is high enough that getting something like this graded down the road will make it that much more of a premium just because of how few there are comparatively to every other card that's being printed right now.
So what you're saying is that the big difference is that it's a collectible item rather than a playable item.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, as soon as you slam it in that case, you're not going to be playing with it. It's, you know, I don't think it's even an option to sleeve up 60 cards in those. Well, I guess you can't sleeve them up clearly, but you can't use a 60-card deck full of all graded cards. I've never heard anyone actually doing that in a tournament. So once you get to that point, you can't play in a tournament. So, yes, there are cards that are playable that have been graded, but for the most part, you are grading something that you no longer intend to play with. And that's the big difference between like new cards and old cards is most new things, you know, rarely are you looking at something like, man, I can't wait to have this in 10 years. You're playing with it in fact right now, or, you know, you have future deck ideas for it. You might hold on to it for a little while, but it's not something that you're looking to hold on to just for sentimental value or something like that, or just because you think it'll be worth money.
What about like, say, Goyf or, you know, say a Jace? Those cards, you know, they're going to be collectible later on. I mean, they are very powerful.
So that kind of goes back. There's really two reasons that I would disagree with both of those options. A, when you're paying $30 to get it graded, you have to be able to recuperate that $30 plus when you go to sell it. So GOIF is already low enough that the premium percentage on something graded, and, you know, unless you got it maybe graded a 10, it just isn't going to be worth it. And even graded a 10, you're not going to make enough worth it to take that chance on a number of them to get that 10. Because not every card you pull out of a pack is a 10 to start with. So you have to think of that too. You're not just getting the maximum if you send in a really nice looking card. And beyond that, it goes to the availability thing. There's a lot of GOIFs out there. And they're not that hard to find. They're not really a collector's item. Most people looking for GOIFs are looking for their playset to play with. People aren't going to be pleased if it's in that case. And I feel like you'll probably just get most people trading with you saying, I would take that if it wasn't in that because I actually wanted to play with in this deck. And that goes back to the collectability issue.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say that I've personally never had a card graded, and I think the times for it are rare. You know, when you start talking some of the rarest cards from Magic's history or, you know, Black Lotus beta cards, things like that, it makes a lot of sense. And maybe it makes sense on the new Comic-Con Planeswalkers, but I think very few and far between examples.
Yeah, I'm not saying you should absolutely go out there and get your Comic-Con promos. I'm just saying as far as things that have been printed in the last couple of years, that is one of the only things I could see any argument for actually grading. I don't think I would get my set graded if I personally had them, but I can see arguments to it.
Well, there you go. That's a very extensive explanation of grading. And then we talked about conditions of cards, and then we got into more grading. So if you don't know your stuff about grading or you want to know some more, you can hit up Ryan, Jason, and Corbin and bother the shit out of them.
Marcel's done with it.
Yeah, if you have any questions about higher-end grading or about like working with the grading systems that they have, feel free to message me. I know quite a bit more about the higher-end cards just because I end up having to deal with them quite often, and grading is not fun. Like, don't... Overall, just stay away from it. I mean, Corbin's right. It's very selective on the cards that you actually want to get graded.
And if you have any questions about Magic Online grading, make sure to bother Marcel with those.
Yes, yep. Indeed. They're all going to be minty.
Change your password.
You don't want your password to get too dusty. No.
Jason, tell us about Mr. Ray Future Pro Perez in the Pro Tour.
What? Why are you bothering me?
Shout out Ray. So Ray did it big. He knocked it out of there. Well, close enough to knocking it out. He got top 32.
2 points away from gold, though.
Yep, Ray has 33 pro points on the year, which makes him silver and not gold, which is a bit of a dagger. But you know what? Ray was second place in the Rookie of the Year race. He had a meteoric rise to the top in his first year. We'll be hearing a lot more from Ray. He's got the whole traveling thing down a little bit more. He's a little bit more comfortable playing on feature matches. He's got the pro lifestyle down a little bit more, I think. So next year, I think it's going to be a big year for Ray. I wouldn't be surprised to see him hit platinum.
Yeah, I mean, to put it in perspective, he's silver with 33 points, and, you know, that's unfortunate that he didn't quite get there. You know, he's only 12 points away from being platinum. You know, like, that's the level he's at in terms of pro points is just so few and far between and basically unheard of for a rookie. Outside of, you know, we talked about this with him last 2 weeks ago, is Jared Betcher's had a huge run this year, but a lot of other years raised 33 points would have made him the Rookie of the Year. So huge shout out to him for everything he does with us and for, you know, just putting in another Pro Tour finish. This was his third top 50 of the four Pro Tours he's played in. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's It's good. So we're glad to have Ray associated with the cast. You know, he's a personal friend of ours. I rode with him to the GP. It's, you know, we're just really proud of Ray. So if you see him, congratulate him, I guess.
And buy some tokens on our website, brainstormbrewery.com/store. And yeah, he's got his own tokens there, some soldier tokens. So you could buy a set of four for $2. And when you see Ray, ask him to sign it. Because he'll be more than enthusiastic to do that for you guys. So go ahead and do that.
So how did you guys feel about, I think the picture going around is Owen Turdenwald taking a nap at the feature table in the top eight of the Pro Tour. Because it was won by Elixir of Immortality.
Cool.
The Pro Tour wasn't won by Elixir of Immortality.
Yeah, it was in that deck.
Well, you're right.
It was in the deck. No,
Marcel's right. It was won by sheep.
Yes, exactly. Sheep won.
Yeah, Ram won it.
It was awesome.
The Ram down.
That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny.
It was two.
Off a mold of, wasn't that a mold of five? That's just brutal.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys don't know, Ivan Flock won it. Four
his
Nyx
name is
Fleece.
His name is Flock, and he won with sheep.
Four Nyx Fleece Ram and two Archangel of Thune in the sideboard is quite the combo. So that is how he got there in the finals, was making those Ram into 5/10s. But yeah, I mean, what do you guys think? We had the old blue white planar cleansing deck win it. We had, you know, for lack of a better term, I guess, Zoo in the top eight. We had black white. I mean, do you guys think it was a pretty good field in terms of standard?
I liked it, but I think that this was excellent. You know, I think there was mono black was represented as like, you know, black white control or black white mid range. And that was there. That was the only part of it, but it's pretty diverse compared to, say, the beginning of the standard season. So I think it was decent. I mean, I still wasn't interested in playing standard again. I'm going to still wait till Khanza Tarkir, but I enjoyed it. I do like blue white control. I mean, it is an aspect of the game. It is not the funnest deck to watch play, but it's part of Magic. It's a classic archetype. It's been there since the beginning. And I actually do like the Quicken aspect of it. Like, it just,
yeah,
I have always liked Quicken.
We had no breath between when we were saying, God, I cannot wait until Bonfire of the Dam rotates out, and, oh my God, I cannot wait till Sphinx's Revelation rotates out.
Yeah, welcome to X spells.
Like, hopefully they don't have anything annoying like that in Khanza Tarkir.
Well, do they have it in, they don't have it in Theros right now.
Now you have precedence. If you see a mythic with an X in it, keep an eye out. Not
like,
that
epic like Epic Experiment, right?
Yeah, we all made a lot of money on Sphinx's Revelation because it was like $3 when I bought in. So, yeah, you know, cheap. People, even after Bonfire, they still underestimated Revelation initially, so.
Well, everyone, it's because of the Blue Sun Zenith that everyone compared it to.
Yeah.
That was not a huge player in Standard. But yeah, I mean, let's talk about some of the other decks. There were Planeswalkers all over the place. Vraska sightings, Garrick sightings, a Johnny Caller the Pride sightings, and Pat Cox, who just tore through the Swiss portion of the deck. I mean, it was just like green-white, well, it was green-white red for Gorklane Rampager, like, Brave the Elements of Johnny, just like that deck that has been around but not at the top. I mean, I don't know. It seemed to me that you cannot, even though it was won by probably the most boring deck in the world, Elixir of Immortality Control, like it was a pretty good top eight overall. There's a lot of the field represented, really.
Something that didn't get there that I wanted to see was that Rabblemaster Red deck. So we started noticing that Legion Loyalist and Satyr Fire Drinkers stock online was dwindling a little bit. So I want to say, like, Thursday night, Friday morning, QS sent out an insider email saying, hey, what's the deal with, Legion Loyalist and Fire Drinker? And then it turned out it was linked to this Rabblemaster Red deck a bunch of pros were on. Goblin Rabblemasters, like, was like 75 cents on TCG Player. So that, you know, the deck was just basically farting those goblins out. Now, the Rabblemaster makes your Legion Loyalist attack, which is a bit of a liability, but it doesn't matter, because you're going to get that.
Hey! You lost Jason.
That's how it works, man. Every time somebody has a good point, they have to get disconnected.
Yeah.
Every single time. And
this is where I brag about getting in on 100 Rabblemasters at 75 cents.
Humble brags for Ryan.
How long did I... What?
Oh, just
how long was I talking that you weren't listening?
Oh.
Maybe 10 seconds.
About 30.
What's the last thing I said?
Rabblemaster.
No, you talked about it being 75 cents, Jason. That was the last thing we had.
Okay. So Rabblemaster was like 75 cents on TCG Player. So the deck was getting a lot of value out of Rabblemaster, and you're going to... You know, it's going to make your Legion Loyalist attack, which is a bit of a liability, but it doesn't matter because those extra tokens it's generating is going to give you Battalion. So the deck seemed pretty good, and I noticed there were a lot of cheap copies of Rabblemaster on TCG Player. So I bought a bunch of copies from a store called MTG Card Store on TCG Player, and they saw that they'd sold all of their copies, and they were very enthusiastic about making such a big sale, so they packaged all their copies up and sent me tracking information. And then 2 days later, I get an email from TCG Player saying, oh, they couldn't find their copies or whatever. So they couldn't find their $1 copies, but they did manage to find a bunch of copies for $3 that they had lying around, so they put those back up on TCG Player. So
when you named them, I thought it was going to be a good, positive story.
You know, I knew it wasn't.
Somebody the props for being an dealer with integrity,
but I guess not. So MTG Card Store and TCG Player, I can't compel you legally to send me those cards, but what I can do is get on my popular podcast and say, you're scumbags.
Oh, man.
It's really sad. So, like, I got sent all of my copies, but I also ordered mine, like, Wednesday. So.
Yeah. Ryan was like, apparently on the card before anybody and didn't tell anyone.
Of course I didn't tell anyone. Why would I tell anybody?
Why would you tell me? I don't know, because we're friends.
It's funny, because I take the complete opposite approach of that. If I'm in on a spec, man, I share it with everybody, because that's, I'd rather have the, I don't know, I feel like that's my job as a magic.
I'm glad yours aren't really selling for $3.
It wasn't really
right
a spec so much as me being like, I really like this card, and being on TCG Player at the middle of the night while I was inebriated and deciding to buy 100 copies. But
I see how many you have for sale right now in TCG Player, and I see them not moving, so that pleases me.
I've already moved most of them.
I don't know. That's one of the knocks on the finance community, right? Is that they never share their specs with anybody. So I go the other way. If I get information that people have not asked me to keep private, I will share it with everybody.
I will at times, but no. Like Rabble Master, I'm not dealing with the whole, you know, everybody get piling in on TCG Player Thursday and Friday and expecting people to ship out. No, if I don't make a call by Wednesday, I don't order it. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. I'm not willing to fight and deal with, like, exactly what Jason just dealt with. That's not worth it to me. If you order it Wednesday, I feel if a store does not send it to you, they, A, didn't package in time because they shouldn't know the results of the Pro Tour. It should have been packaged by Friday, according to TCG Player rules. And beyond that, like, if they don't honor it at that point, then they're just, I feel like at that point, then they are responsible. Like that is not you just trying to scumbag them. Like I got it before there was any results, anything like that. There's no discrepancy about, you know, maybe you ordered it afterwards and like they knew the car was going up. They didn't have time to take it down or whatever it may be.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. That's not excuses.
I ordered Friday. They sent me tracking information and then they like didn't go to the post office. So like, oh shit, take those, you know, get that order back. So
I don't know. We've been round and round on this, and I will point out that it is against TCG Player's policy to do what they did to Jason.
And as you can see, they're really strictly enforcing it.
Well, no, you say that.
Last for words.
Let me figure out the most diplomatic way to say this. That is TCG policy, and the powers that be at TCG have expressed that they take that policy very seriously. So I would suggest if any of you out there have this happen to you, alert TCG Player about it because, you know, I can't guarantee you that they'll enforce it. All I know is that the people who do have the power to have it enforced have said that they care about it. So
Never happened to me, where I ordered Friday morning and I got tracking information. When I got tracking information, I didn't look anywhere else online because I was reasonably certain I was going to get my copy, so I didn't hedge. If I don't get tracking information, I'm like, they might not send these. So I'll hedge. I'll buy from a bunch of different stores and, you know, like whatever orders get filled. And I don't speculate a ton of stuff on, you know, stuff I find out last minute on the floor of the Pro Tour. I think Ray tipped me off about this because he was there. You know, I don't normally speculate on this kind of stuff a ton. Like, my specs are a little bit more long-term, like something like Soldier of the Pantheon. But I thought, you know what, when I got tracking info, I was reasonably sure I was going to get sent it. So this is something like, you know, it's a real learning experience that just because they package it, you know, does not mean that they actually have gone to the post office and are going – intend to send it to you. So that's something I learned. It's a new situation for me to be in, and I just thought it was kind of funny. I can't make them send the card, but, you know, whatever. I got a podcast, so
I mean,
I'm going to let everybody know what happened.
You sound like a...
I have no problem with that.
I sound like a what, Marcel? Like a concerned citizen?
Dick.
A concerned citizen.
I got a podcast, so I'm better than you.
No, I have a bully pulpit to let everybody know they're scumbags. If I was just Joe Blow Nobody, then I couldn't do anything about it.
We've come on... we've come on this podcast and talked about swords that have done a good job, and we have given them credit for doing so.
That is true.
Yes, we did.
So we're fair and balanced.
Three Kings Loot actually, we talked about a situation where there was a thing with Crystal Commerce where it was listed on a bunch of sites, something sold on TCG Player, and I bought it on Amazon at the same time, and they're like, ah, we don't have the copies because we double sold them. They actually went out to the LGSs trying to find copies for me. So that's the kind of customer service we like to see from stores on TCG Player. So
I mean,
I'll give another shout out to Three Kings Loot for being not scumbags.
Yeah, I've recognized stores on here who, I had an order that cards come in on the right condition, and they filled the order and more and let me keep the original cards. And I remember talking about them on the podcast. So I do not blame Jason at all for bringing it to the attention of people, because that's the risk that you run when you decide to run your business poorly.
And scumbags are the exception in my experience.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on. This was a standard Pro Tour and it wasn't bad, which is a good sign, because we now have nothing but standard Pro Tours. The Block Pro Tour and the Modern Pro Tour are no more. We now have 4 standard Pro Tours a year. What do you guys think?
I don't think this is as bad as people are making it out to be. I think people are whining and gnashing and saying this is the end, and they're selling their modern collections. And while I do think that having maybe one modern Pro Tour a year would probably be ideal and the rest standard, I do think that this was a calculated move by Wizards, and they understand the reasons behind it is not taken lightly. And I think this is just going to be better for Magic in general, and having more innovation in standard will just allow the format to stay fresh unless they create a format like they did this last year. So we'll see.
If you're selling your modern cards and you do not play on the Pro Tour, you should rethink your approach.
Totally agree.
The thing is, there's still going to be GPs. You're literally taking one modern event out of the pool every year.
Well, it's going along with the fact that there is no more modern PTQ season. There is a regional modern PTQ, which can be fed by standard PTQQs, you know, in the new qualifying system. So,
yeah, but
there
can be standard PTQs fed by modern PTQQs. It's the store's discretion.
Yeah, I mean, but why would a store run
stores? Events, people like modern. It's successful in most
people.
This point.
Standard is the most played format there is.
Obviously,
trying to maximize attendance.
Format there is. We're not getting into that argument. I don't give a shit.
You're talking about stores running events. Like, if you're a store trying to maximize money, you have no incentive to run modern over standard.
Yeah, but right now.
People can mix it up. Not everybody's going to keep coming to your store week after week if all you're doing is standard.
It's not week after week, Ryan. It's a PT. It's not, no, no, no. Every
modern event, you're wrong.
You're not. It's not PT. It's not once a week. You're wrong. Your argument is based on flawed information. It's not a once a week event. It's once a season PTQQ.
They can do one a month, and they can do one the next month for the previous PTQ. That they had an event for.
It's not even as, and even beyond the PTQQs part, there's plenty of people out there who are running modern FNMs. There's plenty of people out there who run weekly modern events. Like, modern is not dying.
I know. I agree with you on that point. I'm trying to present the side of the argument that people are making, and the point with which you were disputing was wrong. You get to run 4 PTQQs a year. If you're trying to maximize attendance for those, it does not make sense to run modern instead of standard. It has nothing to do with your weekly standard tournament, all of that. I love modern. I play it every week. I agree that you don't sell out your modern cards, but this is the argument people are making, and those are the facts, that it doesn't make sense for a store that's running a tournament 4 times a year to not just maximize attendance. You know?
Yes, standard's more heavily played. That does not mean there will not be modern PTQQs. I can't agree with you on that at all. Especially, so in my local area, there's a bunch of stores, especially in major cities. Anywhere where there's a high density of stores, some of them are going to run modern ones just to set themselves away from the pack, because they will get a higher attendance by doing that rather than just like, oh look, there's 3 PTQQs this weekend within an hour. And they're all standard. Some people just don't want to play standard week in, week out, and that's what the modern's there for. There will be enough of those. I agree there will be more standard ones, but there will be modern ones. You're wrong on that.
You're not understanding, because I'm not making that argument. I'm simply telling you what people are saying. I agree with you. I'm telling you, I'm giving the side of the argument so that people can understand what we're talking about. I'm not saying that there won't be modern PTQQs. I hope there are, and like you said, I'm sure that there is some reason for there to be. I was simply presenting you the argument that people are making.
People will eventually adapt and modern will survive. Wizards is not going to let Modern die. Modern is probably the most balanced format right now and correctly played, I guess. People are having more fun playing Modern than Legacy. I mean, Jeff Hoogland quit playing Legacy to play Modern. So that should be an indicator of something. So this is probably their healthiest format. Why would they all of a sudden they just kill it?
So, yeah, I mean, about the Pro Tours, one of the things that Aaron Forsyth said is that one of the goals of the Pro Tour is to promote the new set, and Modern does not do that as well as Standard does. What do you guys think of that, you know, that statement?
That's a correct statement. You know, new cards don't nearly impact Modern the way that new cards impact Standard. That's by like a long shot. So you definitely get to see the highlighted cards.
Do you think that that should be a goal of the Pro Tour?
I think it is. It totally should be. And I think, you know, like, I mean, the Pro Tour should promote high-end play, but at the same time, you should bring people into wanting to play Magic. And the new cards are what's super cool and wants to get people into playing and buying packs and making Magic healthy. I mean, then their ROI on their advertisement dollars is becoming valuable. All of a sudden, you know, you'll see Hasbro's like, hey, let's put some more money into you know, events. Because we're seeing that we're getting a return on our investment.
And what Marcel means by that is the Pro Tour, it comes out of their advertising budget. They don't have a Pro Tour budget. So, like, the Pro Tour, the whole thing is considered advertisement for the purposes of, you know, funding it. So they want to get a return on their dollars, and if they think they're going to sell more booster packs having a Standard tournament, then that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, and this is, you know, I agree with you guys. That makes a lot of sense. That's one of the things that you know, I guess probably the vocal minority of people were complaining about is they're calling it the promotional tour and not the Pro Tour. Well, I mean, it's always been that. And while I enjoyed watching a Modern Pro Tour, it's not like Modern doesn't exist. There's going to be Grand Prix, you know, the weekly events that a lot of stores have. It will be played at the World Championships. It's not like it's going away. So anyone who is – I'm going to sell my Modern collection because there's no Modern PTQs and no Modern Pro Tour is – I think making a pretty grave mistake. So I have one more note on Modern. This is tangentially related, I suppose. The other thing that happened last weekend is that they released the Pro Tour and Grand Prix schedule for next year. And there are three limited events happening on the same weekend across in three different continents that have not had an exact city determined yet.
Yes, they have. Is Vegas 2.0, Modern Masters 2, baby.
May 30th happens to be my birthday, so that would be the best thing ever.
It is probably going to be Modern Masters 2.
Yes,
yeah,
so
right?
Get your money together. Plan your get your vacation time for May 30th right now. We don't have a city yet, but aim for Vegas. Right? It has to be Vegas. Like, where else in the United States?
Or it depends if they can get the convention center and all of that, blah, blah, blah.
Well, there's only going to be 5,000 people. They could have that anywhere.
It's more of a question of it. Yeah. Sure.
Well, whatever. We could speculate all day. I would say aim for Vegas, but at the same time, save your money, book it. We're going to be there. The event's going to be the 30th. There's going to be Modern Masters 2. It just makes a sense. I mean,
the moment it's announced,
it is probably going to be Modern Masters 2.
Double the cost.
Yeah.
Yeah. As soon as they make the announcement. Yeah.
I mean, we've
definitely
always
do VIP. We learned last time. Yeah. If you want a mat.
I don't know. The VIP for Portland wasn't that great of a deal.
It was really good for Boston, so it just really varies.
It depends on the TO. I mean, we've been talking on this cast about summer 2015 being Modern Masters 2 ever since Modern Masters 1 came out at this point now, just because it made sense with their calendar. And this, to me, nothing's confirmed, but it does look very much like this will be a Modern Masters 2 weekend across the world. So.
And you do see the Modern GPs right after that? So, I mean, why would it be a good way to give an influx of new cards into your card pool and then have Modern GPs? It just makes a lot of sense.
That's all we're saying. Oh, and a brief note about TOs. Star City in GP New Jersey is just going to give everybody a mat.
What?
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, everyone gets a mat.
And
they're going to go Oprah Winfrey with the mats.
You get a mat, sleeves, deck box, all with the Brainstorm mark.
If you just walk in the door? And
well,
side
if you're
of it?
Playing the event.
Oh.
But it's not this like the first 25 people get one.
I know. That's actually wonderful. I'm actually bullshitting.
It's very generous of Star City. They're reinvesting their profit from charging 20% more for singles than everybody else, I think.
Wow. Man, I was just going to say that they're showing a great way to run an event, but or you could do that.
Backhanded compliment.
Ah, that's the end of the cast here. Like,
they're going to bury us alive. No, man, that's
gonna,
a very, you know what?
They're going to bury you, man.
Yeah, they're going to bury you.
I'm distancing myself.
Yeah, we, this is where we stand back from the lightning bolt range. Jeez.
Oh, come on.
Come on. Yeah, like really, come on now.
What are they going to do? Like I paid them a compliment. They are an excellent TO. Star City has been running those opens and the classics, and Star City knows how to run an event. And giving everybody the sleeves and everything, that's great. It's really good that they're doing that. So that's an example to the other TOs. You know, people are going to go to this event. It's going to be huge. And everyone's like, oh, it's because it's the East Coast. Well, maybe not. Maybe the TO matters to people. So that's something for everybody else to take a look at when they're talking about, we'll charge everybody $10 more for the event, but we'll give them a crappy voucher for a side event that's, you know, takes place while they're playing their, you know, the main event. And that kind of crap that TOs are starting to pull. Like, maybe you can't do that with Star City showing everybody how to run an event. So we'll see.
We'll see. So let's see our picks of the week. What you guys got going? I'll start mine off with, I saw Sam McLaren. He was talking about the souls, and he was asked which souls he thought was going to be the most impactful in Standard, and he said Soul of Innistrad. And his reasoning, which sounded like a really good reasoning for me, is like you fill up the graveyard, you get a Soul of Innistrad in your graveyard, and you return three cards. You're basically getting like a 3-for-0. I mean, yeah, you got to pay the temple hit in the mana, but you're getting three cards for absolutely nothing. And if you're able to build a deck around that, it's insanely powerful. And I agree with that. Even when it does hit play and you're able to get a bunch of creatures out of your graveyard. Right now on Modo, I believe it's $1.20. For a mythic, it's $2 in paper, I believe. Let me see. Yeah, it's $2 in paper. It's a
That's
mythic.
Incorrect. That's incorrect. A mythic sees any amount of play. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, all the souls are insanely super cheap right now. On Modo, like, the soul of New Phyrexia is $2.30, and that's the highest one. Other ones are sub a dollar. Like, two of these souls are going to be standard playable at some point throughout standard in this next year. So it's going to happen. And the price of how cheap, at least two, if not all of them at some point. Just because they're powerful enough and there's some graveyard reoccurring. So pick some up now, speculate now, get your cards in now because you won't be mad at yourself. I don't think you can go wrong with most of the souls, at least getting four of all of them at this cheap, or get a couple play sets if you just want to be, you know, light, but I'd go deep on a couple of them. But I say Soul of Innistrad, pick them up.
It's pretty low risk anyway, you know?
Yep.
Okay, well, I got one that's a little higher cost than I normally do. I normally like to do, you know, high volume, low cost, but I'm just noticing you can get a foil Sliver Hive for like $10-$12 online, and there's no way that's correct. If you look at some of the prices that are beginning to creep up this week, I noticed that Sliver Overlord from Scourge is up about 10% over the last week. So the new slivers that are being printed and are standard legal right now is actually exciting people about their old sliver stuff. So if you're noticing, you know, you're starting to get cards like Elvish Piper that are good at cheating big creatures into play is up a little bit. Some sliver cards are up. I'm thinking, man, that, it seems like the legacy EDH, like legacy meaning everything that's legal. So like the casual type players and EDH players and like, you know, people got exciting new slivers to look at. So I think those people are going to want this Sliver Hive for those decks that they're starting to build. And you can make money buying, Sliver Hive at $5 right now, maybe. It was much better to buy them for like $3.50. But I think the foils have nowhere to go but up. I think $10 to $12 on a foily Sliver Hive is going to be ridiculously good. It shouldn't only be 2x. And right now it's twice the non-foil. I'm thinking for a legacy playable foil, you know, an eternal playable foil, just something that good. I'm really thinking that you will be not unhappy if you buy in for $10. And I can't see them going cheaper than they are now. Or I wouldn't tell you to buy in now.
I mean, I'm pretty happy with how we've done just in the couple weeks since the set review came out in M15. Like, Sliver Hive was one of those we talked about when it was like $2 for the non-foil when it first came out. Like,
yeah,
it's good to know that we weren't just crazy thinking that a whole bunch of stuff in the set was too low. And that it's because Liliana's done the same thing this week. It's, you know, neared $9 from the $5 it was when we did the set review. So it's nice to see some of these paying off as we thought they would. I've got one. It's a sell call. And I'll have to start by giving credit to Ryan. It was, I think it may have been 2 weeks ago. I don't remember, but he talked about picking up, a Gale Rider Sliver, the one drop sliver from M14 that gives all these slivers flying. It's gone from $1.50 to about $5 in the past week and a half. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive. I have to say though, I think this $5, $6 mark is probably about the ceiling. I don't know that it'll go back down to one or whatever, even after rotation, but it's certainly not going to go much higher than $5 or $6. So I'd have to say to get out of those now.
It's actually down 10% in the last day. So from Monday to Tuesday, it's down 10%. And I don't know if that's just more people listing them on TCG Player. So what you'll notice is if a card like spikes, cause, you know, like the 4th of July, Gale Rider was $1.50, now it's $5. This is definitely the time to sell because when it spiked, a lot of people bought them for like $2-3, and they're listing them on TCG Player, just trying to get something, anything out of them. So I think I don't think the price is plummeting because it sucks. I think the price is plummeting because a lot of people are listing their copies for sale, and that's going to naturally push the median price toward the bottom the more people that list right. and undercut each other. So right. I think you may have to buy list these at this point.
I mean, hopefully, yeah. Like, the thing is, if you got in at, you know, a dollar like you could have, I think, when Ryan first started talking about them on here, you're going to make some money. So, I mean, just get out now while you can.
True. So I have a question, though, especially in regards to the Gale Rider Sliver going up. Do you think right now is really the time to be getting in on Sliver Hive? Because I have to feel like some of that price is the hype right now. And I know we're obviously not seeing the standard deck list because they're not the decks that are going to make a Pro Tour. But I feel like a major hype behind all of these prices, including the Gale Rider and the Sliver Hive right now, is because it's legal and standard, and you actually have quite a few slivers to play around with. I think you might actually be better off holding out until rotation and see what that Sliver Hive does. I don't think it's going to jump so far as to put you out of range at that point.
So do you think the
Gale Rider was a combination of the fact that it's played in like slivers decks, but the fact that it was also played in mono blue? A lot of armchair speculators use that justification to say, oh, well, Gale Rider's definitely going to go up.
I don't know.
Sliver I think it's spiked Hive, artificially. It's spiked yeah. artificially out of range of what the other slivers are doing.
Sliver Hive is...
It's the only playable
one. Sliver Hive is like the sliver card, right? So like these people who put together this standard sliver deck and it's terrible, whatever, like they're probably just keeping their standard sliver deck put together after it rotates because they like slivers or whatever. Like, and it's from a core set and it's a land that goes into every sliver deck ever. Like,
and my pick of the week was foil.
Yeah,
so foil's
like, a big point.
Being in
yeah.
standard it's irrespective of that. Like, yeah, I don't even the regular pick at all. I don't get it.
Though, is because the standard is what's inflating it right now. That's if it was truly there because of the eternal playability right now, that foil would not just be double. Like, that's actually a key factor of me looking at it to say that the standard is part of what's pushing that price right now, is the foil isn't much higher.
So where do you think Sliver Hive is going to go?
I would agree with the card personally.
Where do you think Sliver Hive is going to go then? Do you think it's going to be $2?
I don't think it's going to go down, but I think you're going to see the card. I don't think it's going to go down a ton, excuse me. I don't know that the foil will see any impact. I'm just saying I don't know that it's going to go up immediately. I think it's going to have to recover from what, no matter what, it's going to take some hit when the slivers leave standard. That's going to happen just
half
because
them are leaving standard.
There is a group of people that right now are using it for standard, even the foils. And after that point, it will start to go back up. But I think you're looking potentially.
I forgot. It's those FNM grinders that are foiling out their standard.
Well,
decks.
I understand what Ryan is saying, but I don't
I mean,
know.
It's
if
fine,
Glacial
it's
Fortress,
I'm just going based on history and precedents.
If Glacial Fortress is $2 after being printed 4 times, I don't think Sliver Hive at $4 is so out of whack. You know, like looking at core set lands.
I'm not calling the non-foil. I don't think you pick up the non-foils right now because half the slivers are about to rotate. But I think, like, you're going to have supply going down and the price not going down much.
I don't see
that the foil being affected by standard.
No. I think Ryan and I both agree with you on the foil. It's the non-foils that I think the question would be about.
All right, who's next for their pick of the week?
That's
did we all go? Oh, it's Ryan. No,
I just don't really have one.
Oh, well,
you got
Ryan's
time.
Is to
well,
poop on ours.
How
am I supposed to shit on yours if you don't have one?
That's why you
want
to shit on yours.
Ryan's pick of the week is don't pick up Foil Silver Hive Lord.
Here we go. My pick of the week, don't mess around with Foil Zendikar lands right now.
Why?
Because of the new promo ones. The new full art promo
ones.
Yeah, it's not going to drop the price of the Zendikar ones, but there was a lot of people in the past couple months talking about how they haven't spiked in a while. And I think this will, if you were looking at speculating in on those, I may hesitate off to see what they do. If you start to see them creeping up over the next couple months, sure, go ahead and get in. But I wouldn't jump in on them right now like I've heard quite a few people talking about, just because the judge foils, I think, will hurt that price some.
I think it's fair to say that the market for people who want full art lands, foil full art lands, is only so big, and every new foil full art land printed hurts it, so.
Yeah, and it doesn't hurt it. It's not like you see the other lands drop usually.
Right,
it's
they just don't go anywhere.
Up as quickly. And yeah, and I just warn people, because the Zendikar lands really have crept up over the past couple of years, but didn't take as big of a spike as they did. I believe it was about 2 years ago they had the last huge spike where they all just jumped above 10 and haven't really looked back since. And people were expecting that again coming up, which would make sense, but I think these are really, because they're mass produced and every judge is getting these from what I understand, you're going to have a lot of in the market, and it's going to take a little while to recover from that.
Is that what these judges, is that what the lands are for? I thought this was the whole, like, nominate a judge.
No, that's,
and then they
that's other
make foil them sort
I
of
think
thing.
This
that's
is
not for the exemplar
different
program.
This is them just saying, like, hey, we're going to start supporting local judges a little more. Rather than just the people who go to GPs, I think they're going, like we discussed this last week, they're letting the TOs take care of things. This is their way of saying thank you to the judges who are, you know, judging their F&Ms, judging their PTQQs, judging GPs, stuff like that. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I just think because it's mass produced, you know, clearly the prices, like, they're beautiful. Don't get me wrong. Those ones will probably be worth quite a bit, but it really will hurt the rest of the market for at least a good 6 month period, more than likely.
Well, there you go. Anything else, fellas, for the rest of the cast? We're good for the night.
I'm good for the night.
Portland, come and see Marcel and I and say hi. I think we might even have some tokens.
I think it's come see Marcel and me.
Man, speaking of QQ, I wish I could be there.
Yeah. You are right, Jason. It is Marcel and me in that
you
situation.
You wouldn't say come see I in Portland.
You are right. Grammar That's checked by, yeah, grammar checked by Jason.
Grammar Damn. Checked by a chemist.
I submit.
Yeah, I would have thought it was I also. Wow. Well, there you go.
No, Jason's right. It's you remove the me, or you removed the other person, and then see where your sentence is. That's why at the beginning of a sentence you say Marcel and I, because you would still say I'm doing this.
Marcel
Anyways,
and I are going to Portland. Come see Marcel and me in Portland.
There you go.
Bam! I love it. I learned. I actually learned some on this cast today. That's awesome.
Can't teach you shit about finance, but I can teach you about the metallurgic properties of thermodynamics.
Yeah, we've been going for, what, 2.5 years now, and that's what you're learning on this cast.
Hey, I aim high, right? You know, you gotta aspire to do better in your life. It's the only way to go.
It's good to know that you listen to us enough that that's what you've learned.
You can never have too much grammar in your life.
We'll do grammar 101 next week.
Oh, God.
Or not. Or never.
Please don't. I can't participate.
I'd like to buy a vowel for $500.
Vowels are that much, man? I used to watch a show, they were like $200.
I don't know. What are they now? I don't care.
I don't watch that. It's like, it's shitty Hangman for dumb people. Like after Jeopardy, it's painful.
I'm pretty sure I was like 10 or 11 when I used to watch the show, but still.
Hey, watching the fails are the best, actually. Seen quite a few of the Wheel of Fortune fails, and you're like, this guy is an absolute fucking idiot.
You know what Wheel of Fortune is? It's the refreshing bite of a lime wedge after the bitter tequila shot of your own stupidity from watching Jeopardy.
What?
It's true. Yeah. No. That's, yeah. Because
You watch Jeopardy, you're like, wow, I'm a moron. And then you watch a bunch of idiots play Hangman trying to win a car, and you're like, yep, I'm smarter than that guy. Hook, line, and blank, I-N-K-E-R. Hook, line, and tinker.
All right.
Shoe, shine, and liquor. So yeah, catch us out there. GP Portland is going down. Check out Brewski Bistro on Twitch TV. You'll see the stream of whatever's going on, and we should have a Blues Q Championship on Sunday night. So look forward to that. We're out of here. Brainstorm Brewery.
That ended abruptly.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.